Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca, Mesut Ozil, pico del área, vaya golazo de Giroud, el escorpión.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arscast Extra. As always, with James from Gunnerblog, a very happy new year to you, James.
Happy new year, goodly new year, let's hope. 2017, let's see what it holds.
Yeah, it started pretty well, it has to be said.
So far, I like it.
It's the perfect year so far. I mean, I know we're not far into it, and you know, there's the potential for lots of things to go wrong in the next 364 days, but I guess we should try and stay positive. Wish everybody listening a very happy new year, wherever you are in the world. Hope it's been going swimmingly for you too. Did you celebrate in grand style?
Well, not really. I went to my mum's house.
Did you try and convince her that you got her a monkey for a New Year's present?
No, I didn't. That was Christmas. Did I talk about that on the show?
You didn't talk about it on the show, but I saw it on Instagram.
I'll briefly surmise that last year, my mum, above and beyond all else, every time I asked her what she wanted for Christmas, she wanted a monkey. She'd got it in her head. She'd seen some sort of David Attenborough documentary. She wasn't specific about what kind of monkey. She just wanted a monkey.
But was she actually serious about this? Like, did she want, like, a helper monkey, that kind of thing?
I don't know. She'd looked into it. I think it was like as a pet slash friend. It seemed very serious. I mean, it was like, you know, a kind of Michael Jackson and Bubbles scenario. I don't know. She wanted this monkey. I entertained the idea, you know, and on Christmas Day, I gave her a wrapped up banana. And when she unwrapped it, her face was an absolute picture. I mean, she really thought that that was a clue that the monkey was the next present, you know, that it was in the shoebox next to it or something. Her disappointment and rage when it transpired there was no monkey was almost not worth it. But this new year, no monkeys, just monkey business, just messing around, having fun at home. It was fun. What about you?
Cool. Yeah, we went out for a few pints and came home, did the usual thing of watching Jules Holland, drank some rum and went to bed. It was all very pleasant. All very pleasant. Woke up on whatever day it was yesterday. That was New Year's Day, feeling not too bad, actually. Because normally I associate New Year's Day with feeling absolutely terrible because it's such a big night the night before and you feel just banjacks. But I didn't feel too bad at all. So I was in reasonably good shape for the Arsenal game. And I was sort of watching Watford against Tottenham for a little bit and then was like, well, no, this is a bad way to start the new year, watching Tottenham win quite convincingly and very easily. So I turned that off.
Yeah. Hopefully everyone else was sort of too hungover to tune into that one.
Yeah, do you know what I did, though? I watched a film, rather than watch Tottenham, I watched a film called The Lobster. Have you seen that, with Colin Farrell?
I haven't, actually. I've heard of it. It's not about a lobster, is it?
No, it's very difficult to explain what it's about, but if you like strange, slightly surreal, dark comedies with some quite disturbing elements in them, I would recommend this film. It's really quite good. So that's what I did instead. I watched that, which was far better than watching Tottenham. And then I turned over and watched Arsenal. And, well, my new year kicked off in grand style, thanks to that handsome French bloke, Olivier Giroud. Blimey.
Wow.
Core.
Crikey.
Jeez.
all of those words, really. All those exhalations and puffings. And I don't think I've ever seen a goal. Well, I've certainly never seen a goal quite like that in person. I mean, it was absolutely extraordinary. It was one of those where there you've got those sort of different types of crowd reaction. You know, there was the reaction of, oh, it's a goal. Then that was almost immediately superseded by this roar of, you know, is that what I think it was? That was so extraordinary. Then that thing where they show the replay in the ground and everyone reacts again. It was just sort of waves of waves of roars. Yeah, you know? It was quite an extraordinary atmosphere.
Amazing. I actually have a piece of audio to illustrate perfectly what you're talking about. You can hear the move starts with Lucas Perez picking up the ball, and the first kind of ooh is Olivier Giroud's flick. It continues to there. You hear the finish, and then you can hear some of the gasps from the crowd. So check this out.
I was watching it, and I was honestly, I was on my feet basically from Giroud's flick on the halfway line, and you were kind of, I was watching this unfold, thinking if this ends up in a goal, this is a great goal. However, it goes in, you know, it'd be a brilliant flowing counter attack move. But for it to be finished in that manner, I mean, you know, at the Emirates Stadium, I'm trying to think of goals I've seen at the Emirates Stadium that rival it, and really. You know, Jack Wilshere's one against Norwich kind of had a similar reaction. You know, it was that extraordinary move. But I mean, there was a
Rosicky goal, which was quite similar to the Wilshere goal. Again, Giroud involved in both of those goals as well, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. He was a big part of the Wilshere goal. So, I mean, it really was an amazing piece of football from start to finish. And what I really like about it is the finish is just incredible because... It's the imperfection in the final ball that turns what would be a really good goal into something almost unique, as you say. You know, we haven't seen that kind of a goal from an Arsenal player before, I don't think. I know people were talking about the Mkhitaryan one from last week, and I'm not really into the idea of, you know, which one is better, but obviously Giroud's is. But, you know... It was the final ball from Alexis that was played behind him. It was the only bum note in the entire move because it started with the Lucas tackle, Bellerin into Giroud, the flaky, flicked it to Xhaka, who played it just small pass to Iwobi. Iwobi's pass into the run of Alexis. If you look at the run Alexis has made down the left is absolutely brilliant, but he puts that ball exactly where he needs it. He comes back inside and, you know, the cross wasn't as good maybe as it should have been, but in that, you get this improvisation, this reflex movement from Giroud to finish the goal with his heel, looking at the ball all the way, because that's what makes it really special, I think. He didn't just sort of blindly throw out a leg. He was looking at it the whole way to flick it over his head then and in off the underside of the crossbar. I did like, was it Barney Rone, his line... writing for The Guardian, he said something along the lines of it gives it 20% more points in the goal of the season roundup. This is known as Yeboah's Law after that great... what was his name, Tony Yeboah?
Tony Yeboah, yeah,
that
one, striker.
Yeah, that he cracked in off the underside of the crossbar a good few years ago. But, I mean, I think that imperfection is what makes it almost... perfect in a way, because it could have been just a routine finish and we'd have gone, that's a great goal. He could have put it in. Giroud could have nodded it home. And you're going, that's a really good goal. But the one thing that was wrong with it is what made it a special goal.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I enjoyed, I know we do the question the second part, but Spiderbug sent in a question saying, who was at fault for the first goal, Alexis for the delivery or Giroud for overrunning it? Which I did enjoy. But yeah, you're right. Like, there is a kind of moment of imperfection in it, but it's that improvisation, that reflex, as Arsene Wenger called it, that allows Giroud to turn that into something extraordinary. And I think aesthetically, obviously it going in off the bar helps. I think the keeper's despairing dive and the fact that it's just outside of his reach, it all adds up. And kind of, as Wenger suggested, transcends football really and becomes almost a piece of art. You don't want to go too heavy on that pretentious kind of thing, but it's, you know, that's a goal that will become iconic now.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I think there's also a danger of, in some ways, overanalyzing it. And, you know, people saying, Arsene Wenger said it's certainly in the top five of the goals that we've scored under his reign. And people are going, well, it's not as good as that goal. It's not as good as this one. You know, it was because, you know, because of the game, it was only against Crystal Palace. And you're going, Jesus Christ, will you just fucking enjoy something on its own merits, without having to compare and contrast it, without doing fucking five things that we've learned from this Olivier Giroud goal, you know, trying to compare it to other goals scored by different players in different circumstances in different games. This was just an absolutely beautiful piece of football. And if you can't enjoy that without having to try and reframe it in some kind of artificial context that only you really give a shit about, what the fuck, what are you doing? You know, just, it's as Arsene Wenger said, the moments, people come to football for moments like that. And he's absolutely right. You know, we get so
spectacularity,
focused. Spectacularity, exactly. You know, it was just absolutely brilliant. And people should enjoy it for what it is without trying to find a way of doing it down or trying to play down the significance of it, et cetera, et cetera. I did see some people talking about it. They'd only heard about the goal on Twitter. And when they saw it, they said they felt a little bit underwhelmed by it because people have been talking about it so much. And I think it was Michael Cox from Zonal Marking who makes, you know, the great point that, you know, when you're watching it in the context of a game, seeing it unfold in front of you, that's a big part of what makes it so incredible, you know? So, you know, it's just fantastic.
I think it's a bit joyless, isn't it?
To take
that stance.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those moments that inevitably fans of other clubs probably are going to snipe at it. But
it was for Arsenal fans as well going, well, Bergkamp scored.
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
Oh, come on. Of course, you know, nobody's saying this is the best goal ever. Apart from, you know, I know there is a tendency, isn't there, these days to try and push everything to an extreme. So it's either the best goal ever or the worst performance ever, or he's the best player ever or he's the worst performer. You know, but people who live on those extremes are a bit weird anyway. So you should just ignore them. Nobody's saying that this is like the best goal that's ever been scored, but it's a fucking brilliant goal and probably the best goal that's been scored this season, I think. And we should just enjoy that for what it is. Take it on its own merits. And just fucking watch replays of it again and again and again.
I completely agree. I mean, as we did with Mesut Ozil's goal, or such a different goal against Ludogorets. What a treat we've had this season to see two goals of that quality. I thought it was just extraordinary. And that's the word I keep using, but it's really the only word for it. It was completely unlike anything I've seen from an Arsenal goal before. The closest would probably be, do you remember Eduardo da Silva scoring that goal where he kind of flicked it off the outside of his foot? But it was so much more, his balance was so much better at that point. He was so much more in control of it, you know.
He was waiting for a pass rather than running it fully. He hadn't just run 50 yards into the box from his own half, you know. That was against Burnley, I think, in the FA Cup.
So it was. But the thing about Giroud is as well that, you know, with certain players, you might feel like, oh, he's just swung a leg at that. But we have seen things kind of this nature from him before. I do think technically he is extraordinarily underrated. And I think of a goal. There was a goal, I can't remember who it was against, but the ball was cut back from the right-hand side and he used the outside of his left foot to kind of flick it into the top of the net. Do you remember that goal?
Could have been West Ham, maybe. I'm not sure. I do remember the goal for sure.
And again, it just showed that how dexterous he can be and how prepared he is to use any part of his foot to manipulate the ball and score a goal. Obviously, in that moment, you know, it's not something you can practice, really. It's not something you can ever do again, I suspect. But yeah, just a great moment. I was very, very, yeah. very privileged to be there watching that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're right. He can look clumsy. That's the thing about Giroud. He can look clumsy. He can fall over. Some of his touches aren't necessarily great. But, you know, put him in front of goal. And I think if you were to put together like a highlights reel of all the goals that Olivier Giroud has scored for Arsenal, you would be surprisingly tumescent watching it because he scored some absolutely fantastic goals. And I think as well we're seeing a player who I suppose in some ways could have gone into a shell a little bit, right? Given the start to the season that he had, he was left out, obviously because he was back late from the Euros. He was put on the bench. Alexis is starting up front. Then he gets injured. He's sort of eased back in still, from the bench. He's now got 7 goals from only 4 starts. I know he's made about 12 substitute appearances as well. You look at the goals, the 2 goals at Sunderland. When he came on, it was 1-1. Again, 2 brilliant goals. 2 really fantastic goals at Sunderland. Scored the goal against West Brom to win us the game last week. He scored the goal against Manchester United this season to get us a point away at Old Trafford and to sort of, cause them pain, which is fantastic. So we're getting more of the best of Olivier Giroud, if that makes sense, because what's happened down the years is that we've been so reliant on him that there's been such a burden, a goal-scoring burden on him, that when he doesn't score, we tend not to look at what the bigger picture is. We go, or people, certain people will go, well, Giroud's rubbish, or he's a donkey, he's not a guy who should be playing for a club like Arsenal. But when that burden, when that goal-scoring burden is shared around a little bit, when there isn't so much weight on him, when he hasn't been played into the ground, because we literally have nobody else who can play centre-forward, then you get the best from him, perhaps on a more consistent basis. And I think that's maybe what we're seeing this season.
Yeah, and when you look back, I mean, it was crazy, really, how reliant we were on him for a couple of years. I mean, we all remember the season where Yaya Sanogo was his first choice backup. Mm. And, you know, I mean, that tells you everything. I think Giroud's done really well. And I think as well, his attitude's been excellent. He hasn't mouthed off in the press. He hasn't been critical of the manager. He hasn't, demanded a move. If anything, his agents come out and made noises very much the opposite. He seems willing to sign a new contract. Some suggestions it may already even be signed. And that, I think, shows a humility, and the same kind of humility, to be honest, he showed in his interview after the goal. I think what we're seeing really is that he's a good guy and a good guy to have in the squad. And what he's done in the past 2 games has been very valuable. Arsene Wenger was very keen after the game to point out, look, Giroud scored some good goals, but if you look back, he scored the header at Old Trafford. He scored the crucial winner against West Brom. He scored some important goals too.
Yeah, I think it was quite interesting that Arsene Wenger said himself, maybe he doesn't get the credit he deserves for those kind of goals, even from me, is what he said.
Yeah.
So, I think, that there has been a time and a place for criticism of Giroud, but I think, generally speaking, the bigger criticism has been that we haven't had the squad around him. I'm not saying he's the guy you build your squad around, but we really haven't in recent years had any reliable sort of backup or other players who are chipping in with the goals the way that they have been this season, with Ozil, Iwobi even, Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Alexis, of course, guys who are scoring goals from the forward positions, rather than it being a case that, well, if our main striker doesn't score, we don't score. So, it's a positive, and I'm glad for him, because, like you say, he hasn't mouthed off, he hasn't kicked up in any way. He spent 4 years as the first choice striker at Arsenal. When he's fit, he's played, because of the reasons we said earlier, and now all of a sudden he's relegated to second choice, perhaps third choice, for certain games. And the way he's responded to that has been to just knuckle down, work hard, wait for his chance, and when he gets his chance, he scores goals. I don't think he can really ask for much more than that.
No, and I have to say, I really enjoyed his celebration as well. It really felt like he knew he'd done something a bit special.
Yeah, the look on his face.
He kind of celebrated twice. He kind of celebrated once running around, and then he kind of went back to the crowd, and I sort of thought, fair play, I think you've earned that one.
There's a brilliant picture. I think I retweeted it, by Ed Jones, who's one of the cameramen for Arsenal Football Club on Twitter, and he's just posted a picture, which I retweeted, so you can check it out on my Twitter timeline, of Giroud, sort of arm over the back of Lucas Perez, rain is coming down, and he's watching the goal on the big screen with a big smile on his face as well. And who would blame him? Who would blame him? Do you know what the other thing, just before we move off the goal, if you watch it again, and I'm sure people have watched it countless times, there's an amazing just half a second where Matthew Flamini is running back into the box, and as Alexis steps inside to make the cross, Flamini just kind of, he sort of slows himself down just for half a second, and then the cross comes over and he realizes that it's going over his head, and he, you know, tries to pick it back up again. If he hadn't stopped, he would have been in the way of that goal. So thank you, Matthew Flamini, for that like bizarre lapse in concentration.
Well, given that Alexis's cross was actually a bit behind Giroud, I think we should probably credit Matthew Flamini with the assist.
So look, what else stood out for you yesterday? I can think of two things really that caught my eye. One of them, go on.
Oh, no, I'm intrigued to hear yours while I desperately think of something that isn't that Giroud goal.
Okay, well, Alex Iwobi, playing in the Mesut Ozil role,
yeah,
I thought was really very good indeed. And I think what we're seeing is a player who in the long term is probably going to play in that position rather than as a wide player.
Yeah, he looks much more comfortable in there in some respects. I came away from the game thinking, you know, some of the problems we see in his game in the wide areas seem less obvious when he's playing through the middle. I think that's a more natural fit for him, isn't it?
Yeah.
He was excellent. And Arsene Wenger was very, very, you know, somebody asked him in the press conference, said, oh, I thought Iwobi played well. And Arsene Wenger seized upon it immediately. It was like, yes, I completely agree. And it sounds as if, you know, it's funny, we were talking about a player who's going through a dip a few weeks ago, but an Oxlade-Chamberlain seemed to have secured a place in the side, but that just seems to have shifted a little bit again, doesn't it, in a way of his favour in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, Oxlade-Chamberlain had that little injury, little hamstring injury, but, you know, for a guy who's only 20 years of age, and when you think about how it was that he's been introduced into the team. Now, it started, people point to the Barcelona game, and I think the Barcelona game last season was when Arsene Wenger put a real show of faith in his talent by starting him in the Nou Camp. But he had been playing quite a bit before that.
The FA Cup, I think.
Yeah, he'd been playing in the FA Cup. He'd been playing in the Cup games. I think, man, I'm just going to look it up here, but I'm pretty sure he'd made about 10 appearances before that, you know, sort of on and off the bench a little bit, playing in the Cup games. So he's been eased into action. And I think it was quite telling even back then that Arsene Wenger was prepared to play him as the number 10 in the absence of Mesut Ozil. So I think that's something that he recognizes is going to be his long-term position. But I just think he's such an exciting player. And there's something about the way that he passes the ball. He's just got an eye for a pass that maybe one or two others who play in his position don't have. He manages to fizz the ball into feet very well. Yeah, I mean, let me have a look here. Barcelona. So, yeah, I mean, he made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 appearances, you know, in the team before he was given that run towards the end of the season when he was given the start in Barcelona. So, you know, he had been eased into action, but that was obviously the point where he made a real step forward. He's only 20 years of age. I think he's made, how many appearances has he made this season? Just going to look it up here. So he's 17 starts and 5 appearances from the bench. So that's 22 appearances. There aren't many players who have played more games this season. Xhaka's 22, Sanchez 24, Koscielny 23, Ozil 22. You know, so he's a very much a regular first-team player. And while I think we have to expect some fluctuations in his form, he really is an exciting prospect.
Yeah, he's so smooth on the ball.
Yeah, he does.
There's such flow to his game, you know. And also what I was struck by yesterday, I don't know if you noticed this as well, but I think of him as a very elegant, very technical player. But there were a couple of occasions where I really noticed his power yesterday, his strength. There was one time where he muscled, I think it was Wilfried Zaha off the ball, just turned him really well with his shoulders. And I thought, well, that's something that, you know, when you're talking about comparisons, you know, that Ozil doesn't come as naturally to him, that physical power that Iwobi has. And I just think he's such a thrilling prospect. I love watching him play football because everything he does is so graceful and so natural. That's the only way I can describe it. The football flows out of him.
Mm.
And yeah, you can see why Arsene Wenger loves him so much, can't you? He is a classic Wenger player. I mean, in some ways, I was watching this yesterday, and there were a couple of occasions where Alexis had the ball, and Arsene Wenger's frustration at Alexis was kind of evident. You know, he would turn away or throw his arms out or be like, why have you made that decision?
Mm.
And Iwobi's the opposite. I kind of feel like as great as Alexis is, he has certain qualities in him that are un-Wengerish, and that makes him good.
Yeah.
you know, he's a kind of a more impactful player. But Iwobi, you can tell he's come through the Arsenal Academy because he's everything that Arsenal wants in an attacker. He's selfless, he's intelligent, and so technically accomplished. I really hope he continues to progress as he has, because it's been an amazing 12 months.
Yeah, really has. The other thing that I liked yesterday was Granit Xhaka. I think it's his seventh successive start in the Premier League. The last game he wasn't picked for was Manchester United away. And I think in the absence of Santi Cazorla, he's becoming very quickly the fulcrum of the midfield. That much of what we do goes through him, but the way that he can distribute the ball either short or long, spread it to either side, is really fantastic. It's adding something to the way that we play. And I maybe it's just me, but there's something about the way that he passes the ball. It feels like there's top spin on the ball or something. Does that make sense when you see him
move?
It
does, yeah. Funnily enough, I was, you know, we were talking earlier about Giroud's ability to manipulate the ball, the dexterity of his feet, the way he hits it with other parts of his foot. I feel the same kind of when Xhaka has the ball at his feet. It's almost like he's able to kill the ball when it lands. I'm thinking of one pass in particular to Nacho Monreal yesterday that was sublime. It was sort of clipped over the, and that was a nice little partnership across the course of the afternoon. And he's so good at finding particularly the fullbacks in those high advanced areas. It's a weapon that we've not really had in our arsenal before, because Cazorla is a brilliant passer. But if you think about Santi's best passes, they tend to be of a type. They tend to be across the ground. They tend to be low. They tend to be into Mesut Ozil. Whereas Xhaka has got excellent vision and the technical ability to complement that. I agree that he's massively kicked on. He's massively kicked on. And the fact that he was left out of that Old Trafford game, you know, you mentioned that there, that sounds absurd now. You know, he feels like, in terms of the central midfield, arguably the first name on the team sheet in Cazorla's absence.
Yeah, for sure. And I think now the question is, who is going to be the long-term partner for him? That's the question that we've got to, well, Arsene Wenger has got to deal with. I'm still not sure what the answer is. I do feel like it might shift from game to game a little bit, but we'll wait and see what happens there. But yeah, very promising performance from him. And overall,
I was just going to say, Arsene Wenger, sort of before the Palace game, spoke about Xhaka's side of his game improving, and that's sort of what's earned him his place in the side. Is that something you've seen reflected on the field?
What was that? Because he just cut out. What side of his game?
Defensive side. You know, he talked about his defensive contribution being better.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I don't know. I mean, I only see what I see, but I think that's been relatively consistent throughout, to be honest. But Arsene Wenger seems to feel there's been a big upturn there.
Yeah, I think maybe there's just a touch more discipline. And I think maybe as well, he's a little more in tune with the pace of the game in England, so he's not necessarily caught out positionally the way perhaps he was. Remember when he got the red card? I think he's just more up to speed with English football. But I'd agree with you for the most part. I think he's been quite consistent in the defensive side of his game. But maybe the manager is seeing things that we're not seeing, fine tuning or what have you. But he is the deepest of the midfielders when he plays. Even Elneny was playing a little bit ahead of him yesterday, and he's much more a guy who'll link play. And the two of them work quite well together as well, I think, you know.
Yeah,
so,
I liked them. And then he's off now, of course, to the African Cup of Nations. But the one thing on Xhaka is probably that I think the the shoot chance, I'm still not a fan of. He's got a shot accuracy of 10%, which is the lowest in the Arsenal squad.
Yeah, he does seem to react to that a little bit, doesn't he? As if it's like, I better. Don't want to let them down. They're telling me to shoot. Yeah. Okay, I give it a go. Yeah. He could be a little more. What's the word I'm looking for?
Sensible.
Yeah, judicious. That's exactly the word I was looking for. But at the same time, I think it's not a bad thing to have a player who's willing to have a pop from distance every now and again, because it just adds that little bit of variety to the way that you play. So I wouldn't want him to cut it out altogether, but, you know, maybe not three or four times a game.
it forces the defence out, doesn't it? It makes it hard to sit deep because you know that you've got to try and close somebody down.
Yeah.
So the fact that the threat's there is a good thing. The actual practice of it, probably less so.
Yes. So look, overall, a really good win, very comfortable. Felt a little bit like we were playing within ourselves because we know we've got another game tomorrow night. Of course, we're playing Bournemouth, but two clean sheets in a row as well, which I think is significant.
That was my big takeout. That's the thing I was really satisfied with. I mean, I think when you break down why it's happening, you've got to look at the opposition. And I think in West Brom and Crystal Palace, we faced two teams who didn't have much attacking ambition or ability. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah.
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 I mean, Palace were very, very poor. In that first half, I thought Palace were absolutely atrocious, to be honest. They offered almost nothing. I sort of feared at kickoff they did that sort of rugby trick of lining everybody up and launching the ball to the wing, and I thought, oh God, is this going to be one of those aerial assaults? But as it transpired, no, we didn't have too much to deal with. There was that one spell in the second half, wasn't there?
Yeah. I mean, we gave away a corner quite carelessly. I think Monreal passed it back to Cech and it went out. And from the corner, he had to make a save. Then he punched. Then he made another save. I think it came to Townsend and he saved again there. But that was it. They didn't look dangerous at all. Gabriel and Koscielny had Benteke pretty much in their pocket. So it was a very accomplished, comfortable 2-0 win, and just what the doctor ordered, I think.
Absolutely. And of course, this midweek is an interesting one because it's one of Chelsea's harder games. You know, they travel to Spurs on Wednesday, so... No.
They're going to win. There's just literally no way Tottenham are going to do anything but bottle that game. The same way they did. Do not think... Remember last season when Tottenham were 2-0 up, and they were like fighting for the title. They were, looked like they might go the distance with Leicester. Do you remember? And then they had that extraordinary, hilarious, I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, they had that terrible meltdown where they let in two goals and then completely lost their discipline, players sent off all over the place, and, you know, they just fucking lost their shit altogether. That is going to be in their minds tomorrow when they're playing a team as relentless, or on Wednesday when they're playing a team as relentless as Chelsea. So I'd be really surprised if they did anything other than lose that game.
Well, look, it's a tricky one, isn't it? I don't want to want them to do particularly well, but if some sort of, you know, match abandoned result where both teams have deducted points, if Spurs could start that match as they finished the last one, basically fighting everyone on the field, then that would be something.
Yeah, let's have a good old brawl involving, you know, both sides. But no, I think you'd take a draw in that one. It's very difficult. I mean, your head tells you that you want Chelsea to drop as many points as possible, but, you know, even if they dropped a couple in that game with a draw, it would do us. But of course, we've got a job on our hands. We've got to go to Bournemouth less than 48 hours, well, around 48 hours after playing, and pick ourselves up and put in a kind of a performance. I suppose we probably have questions about that, do we? There might be some questions.
I imagine so. We'll have a look. If not, I'll ask you one.
All right, cool. Well, look, we'll leave it there for part one. We'll come back with part two and your questions right after this.
So happy. This is fantastic. So happy. Fantastic. The fans so happy. This is fantastic. So happy.
So happy. This is fantastic.
So happy. This is fantastic. Fantastic. So happy I go to golf with my dog.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arsecast Extra. This is the part of the show where we answer the questions you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arseblog, and also on the Arseblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheArseblog. James, we talked about Bournemouth just before the break, and obviously that's a tricky enough fixture. We played them fairly recently at the Emirates, and we're going to have to face them again. Ahmed Yusuf, who's Ahmed Yusuf 10, would want to know, or wants to know rather, who would you rest against Bournemouth, given Iwobi slash team as a whole did well? Would you give another rest to Mesut Ozil, who missed the game through illness, apparently?
Yeah, I mean, are you suggesting you think that maybe he wasn't ill? Maybe he's just taking line?
I think he was, because Arsene Wenger said in his press conference on Friday that there were one or two players who were struggling a bit with illness or flu, so obviously Ozil was one of those. The kind of game where you could have rested him if you'd really wanted to, but we'll see. But if he's still bedridden, I'd say his chances of playing against Bournemouth are quite slim.
That's it. Yeah, I think Arsene Wenger seemed relatively unsure about his participation against Bournemouth. Is there any other player we're expecting back? I mean, Theo Walcott, what's the story with him? Do we know?
I think he might be back. I'm not 100% sure. He had a calf injury that kept him out of the game against Crystal Palace. So it's only 2 days. So it would be a bit of a surprise if he were back. But players who came in, Elneny's gone. Lucas Perez came in, did all right on the right hand side. I'm not sure he's gonna keep his place there. But again, it depends who's fit and available for tomorrow. I can't see too many changes, though. Can you? I think Coquelin will come back in, given it's away.
This question comes from Jacob Rothenbusch at Gathy Fogg, and he says, "Do you think Mustafi comes straight back into the team, or should Gabriel be rewarded for his play?"
That's a good question. I mean, you could make a case for Gabriel keeping his place. Absolutely. You know, he's done well in the last couple of games. It depends on what the manager's view of Mustafi versus Gabriel is. Does he really rate one much more highly than the other? I think we might see that. We might see Gabriel sit this one out and then come back in at the weekend alongside Rob Holding. To play in the FA Cup game. So I think there's probably a bit of wiggle room there. Coquelin in midfield, maybe Ramsey. I think he's being quite cautious with Ramsey, though, isn't he? He's easing him back in with 20 minutes here, 20 minutes there. And I think they said on the television that Ramsey had gone through a fairly rigorous warm-up right throughout that second half to make sure his hamstrings were A-OK.
Yeah, I think, let me have a think about what I think the change will be. I think that Mustafi probably will come in for Gabriel.
Yeah.
Because Gabriel's played a lot of football recently and will play in the FA Cup game too. I think Coquelin for Elneny is kind of a straight-ish swap. Mm. And then I think Iwobi will stay in the team. Giroud and Alexis probably stay. And then maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain come in for Perez on the right-hand side.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. Or even Ramsey on the right if he wants to be a little bit adventurous. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't think there's a huge amount of scope for change, to be honest. But yeah.
We've got a few injuries at the moment, haven't we? We're carrying just a couple of knocks here and there.
Yeah.
But it's a big enough squad that we can kind of survive it. One thing I wanted to ask you is, bearing that in mind. Were you surprised Alexis Sanchez played the full 90 minutes yesterday?
No. No. Just because that's what happens. That's what he does. Unless it's... I think maybe if we'd been 3-0 up, he might have taken him off. But at 2-0, if they get one back... I thought Alexis, you know, despite how much he frustrated Arsene Wenger and despite the way he appeared to be frustrated himself, I thought he was, really good against Crystal Palace. He kept driving, kept trying to make things happen. It wasn't always successful, but, you know, he was playing it like it was a cup final. And on the one hand, you might say, you know, just calm it down a little bit. It's only Crystal Palace at home. We're 2-0 up. But, you know, you're asking him to... second guess his own nature there. You know, he just can't do it any differently. And Wenger has said in the past that sometimes if you give a player a rest, that's the worst thing you can do for them. So maybe he feels like Alexis's momentum is such that, you know, 90 minutes after 90 minutes after 90 minutes is the best thing for him. But yeah, I mean, look, there's a big common sense party that says, yeah, you could give him a rest, but then reality kicks in and that's just not the way it's done.
Yeah, I probably, if I'd been in charge, and there's lots of good reasons that I'm not, I probably would have given a rest given that we've got a game so soon after, but I know what you mean about the way Arsene Wenger does things. On that, this is a question I had from Atbin, who's at Atbin16, and they said, is Sanchez showing too much frustration on the pitch, i.e. throws a tantrum every time a teammate makes a mistake?
It's a good question, that. In one way, you know, it's a guy who just wants things to be as perfect as they can be, you know, for the benefit of the team. There was a moment, I think, in the second half where the ball dropped for Ramsey and Ramsey tried a first-time pass, little volleyed pass over the defence, sort of towards Sanchez in the area. Remember where Ozil scored that goal? Could have been against Bournemouth. Would have been crossing towards the back post. And he overhit it. It was difficult to get the ball there, given the way the ball was dropping down to him. And he was very visibly unhappy about it, Sanchez. But the thing about it was, there was like a defender right on top of him anyway. And, you know, you wonder, does it cause any issues? Does it cause any problems? But as long as players can put it in the context of a game, that's just the way he is when the game is on. It's not personal. You know, there have been times down the years where you could see that perhaps certain behavior from certain or towards other players was very deliberate. It felt personal almost, you know? Whereas I don't think that's the case with Alexis. I think it's just his general frustration at not being able to score a goal or not. I mean, he was frustrated when Oxlade-Chamberlain didn't score at the end as well. Did you see that?
Yeah.
You know, that would have been another assist for him, you know, and I don't think he's a guy that lives off assists, but I think it's just general frustration at the team not doing as well as he wants it to do. So I wouldn't be too concerned, I don't think.
No, I guess I think the problem with it is the kind of the underscoring narrative about his future. You know, it's that thing of like, well, is it somehow related to that? I guess that plays on people's minds. I think it's just his nature. I think any team he was in, however well they were doing, he would be showing that level of frustration. That's his character. And in a way, it's probably a sign of his comfort, Arsenal. I think when you first arrive at a club, you're probably less inclined to behave in that way. Mm. But probably as he gets to know his teammates more, he feels more at home and is more himself. And I think this is the way he is. I don't think you would ever ask, you know, your Patrick Vieiras or your Roy Keanes to calm down. I think it's just something that's inherent in a player, and it's what makes Alexis who he is.
You know? Yeah, and there's part of it where if someone is demanding more from you, then that's not a bad thing either. If it gets you out of a comfort zone where you go, oh, well, that pass didn't work. Well. But like, oh, shit, well, I got to make sure that happens next time because he's going to go crazy with me. And, you know, but just from the point of view that, like, he's an amazing footballer and I guess you'd want to please him in a way, you know? You want him to be thinking of you as a good player as well. So, I don't think there's anything too destructive about it in any way, to be honest.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah. Long may his shouting and hand-waving continue.
Yeah, AFC Stew makes a point, who's at Gunners Stew, makes a point. He said, did you notice Perez tracking back in the build-up to the goal and putting the tackle in? He got Gabriel's message. So that little contretemps that they had towards the end of the game against West Brom turned out to be a positive thing, I guess. But Jack Williams, who's at JDWilliams_94, wants to know, is the Perez-Podolski comparison a fair one? That was made on television by Gary Neville yesterday. He said that Perez reminds him of Lucas Podolski.
Did he say that in a flattering way or a disparaging way? What was the context?
I don't think it was disparaging. I think it was perhaps partly because of the one-footedness of him. He's very, very left-footed, isn't he? But also just perhaps the kind of player that he is, the way that he runs. I don't necessarily see it myself. I think they're quite different players. Some of Perez's movement is really excellent. There were a couple of times where he was almost played through, having made a brilliant run from the right-hand side towards the central striking position. So I never really associated that kind of movement with Podolski, but perhaps just in terms of what kind of an impact he can have on the squad.
Yeah, I think he did all right yesterday. I thought there were a couple of moments where he miscontrolled the ball or sort of his decision-making was a little off. I thought particularly in the first 20 minutes, he felt like a player who was kind of pushing a bit too hard, you know. But I think that's inevitable when you get a chance after so long. I like him. I slightly fear for him too, just in terms of the sheer wealth of options at Arsene Wenger's disposal in those areas. I find it hard to see where his chances to play are going to come, especially once Danny Welbeck comes back. I think that the Podolski thing, I guess for me, the comparison is, like, could he be a sort of square peg in a round hole to an extent? You know, I'm not personally convinced that Arsene Wenger believes he can fit into the system that fluidly. Even though I agree with you, the evidence is relatively encouraging and the numbers are good. I don't know. I suspect we would have seen more of him if he had more of the manager's faith. But it's still early days, relatively, in his Arsenal career, and he's had a significant injury too. But I don't know if he's the same type of player as Podolski. I think you're right. He's more movement-based, more mobile. He's not super quick. He's not, you know, Theo Walcott quick. But he's got that half yard of movement that makes him... It's hard to find a comparison, to be honest. I'm desperately searching, you know, as people do these days, who's Giroud's goal as good as, who's Lucas as good as.
Maybe he's just like a pretty decent player in his own right. I thought the way that he linked up with Hector Bellerin down the right-hand side was really promising at times. They had some nice build-up. They seemed to be more or less on the same wavelength, apart from one time when Lucas made a great run down the outside. He was looking for Bellerin to pass, and he cut back inside and didn't in the end. But that was promising as well. And look, I think we have to look at him and other players in the squad who've come in yesterday and done a job, that this is why you have the big squad. So you can keep some players relatively fresh. You've got cover for injuries. It doesn't necessarily hinder you as a team. You can think of times where we've had to use players where they have been very much square pegs in round holes and it hasn't worked. And the team becomes a little bit lopsided because of that. So I think he's a guy who can play in any of the front three positions. He's had a reasonable impact so far, and I think he will contribute between now and the end of the season as well.
Let's have another question. I think he did well yesterday. Who was I going to say? Oh yeah, this one. I'm absolutely rambling. Actually, you might have to cut this out. I've just completely lost my track.
No, I refuse completely to cut this out.
Oh man, okay.
This is behind behind the curtain stuff. People can see what goes on.
This happens every 5 minutes. Yeah. All the rest get cut out.
It takes me days to put these things together.
Truth be told, for some reason I've Googled Olivier Giroud. I probably wanted to see how old he was or something, and I've just got images of Olivier Giroud, bearded and unbearded, staring back at me, and I think I just got slightly lost in his gaze, which will happen. Which will happen.
It will.
So Justin L. Cameron asks, in Elneny's absence, he goes, of course, away to African Nations today, I think, we will only have three fit and available central midfield options. Are you a tad concerned? Coquelin, Xhaka and Ramsey, I guess, being the three.
They're the three. Look, you're always a little bit concerned when what looked like an extraordinarily strong position where we had Xhaka, we had Coquelin, start of the season, we had Cazorla, we had Wilshere, we had Ramsey, and we had Elneny, all of a sudden 50% of that is gone. So, yeah, you don't have room for maneuver. You don't have room to pick up any injuries. But I think as well, we're at times a little bit predisposed to looking at the worst case scenario. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
whereby, like, these three guys could stay perfectly fit and play the games, and then Elneny's back, and then, you know, we're pretty much covered again. So there's always a worry with Arsenal when it comes to injuries, but you just can't get hung up on it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that Elneny's absence did make me think is I thought it cast sort of kind of a new light on Jack Wilshere's decision to move to Bournemouth in a way, because I forgot, to be honest, that Elneny was not going to be absent for 6 weeks of this season. But when you factor that in, it does make that look even more interesting. I think it's a blow, because I thought Elneny was very good yesterday. Yeah. There was a slight sense of he was playing, well, let's use him while we can, kind of thing. And I thought he and Xhaka looked very complementary as partners.
Mm.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a worry. The only reason it worries me is because I wouldn't want to see an injury to Granit Xhaka, because I've seen Francis Coquelin and Aaron Ramsey in tandem before, and, you know, it's never been particularly successful.
Yeah.
So that would be the slight concern for me. But, you know, I think the fact that we've got players of the quality of Cazorla and Elneny out, and we still have the kind of depth that we have, you know, is it primarily a good thing?
Yeah. All right. Here is one. Where the hell's it gone? This one comes from Ole Krabbe Poulsen, who's at the Krabbe. And he says, someone appears to kick Giroud in the arse after scoring against West Brom. It was Alexis Sanchez. Kicks him in the arse. Giroud's on the ground, and Alexis just gives him a little toe up the hole. He says,
yes.
Should we see more simulated violence in goal celebrations in the future?
Well, I mean, Alex Iwobi's goal celebration, I don't know if he did it yesterday, but it's typically a kind of simulated machine gun firing, isn't it? So,
yeah.
There's a bit of violence there. But violence on each other? Yeah, why not? I think that'd be good. Like, you know, sort of a staged... Someone did it when Wayne Rooney got knocked out. He did it himself, didn't he? He did a celebration where he got punched and knocked out. Do you remember after...
Yeah, he did... Who was he? Like, boxing with one... Phil Bardsley or somebody like that at home.
Someone like that, and got absolutely knocked out on his own floor, yeah. I mean, the stupidity of that.
When you see the video of it, actually, I think he comes within like a couple of feet or even inches of smashing his head backwards off the countertop in the kitchen. Like, it could have been really bad. I mean, I know Rooney probably has a head that's made of material that's harder and denser than most concrete you can find, but still.
Yeah. If he smashed it open, just nothing would come out. It'd just be a hollow vacuum inside. Yeah, I do think simulated violence would be good. I think they should all have, like, you know, stage combat lessons so that they could launch into, like, you know, a full-scale Matrix-style face-off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be into that.
But don't they do that thing where in the warm-up or in training where if you're, you know where they do the one-touch passing, and if you get it wrong, the guy's in the middle, if you get it wrong, you get like a flick on the ear. So they could do stuff like that. Or what about giving the, you know, someone a wedgie after they score? Just hike those underpants straight up and... No.
When I played football as a kid, there was a thing where I can't remember what you had to do wrong to incur this punishment, but the punishment was that you had to stand in the middle of the goal and bend over, and everyone in the team could try and kick the ball at your ass, basically, from the penalty spot. But I can't remember why that was enforced, but I remember it happening, like a sort of deep trauma.
So you're saying that your coach would make small boys stand over with their... bottoms in the air.
Yeah.
Mm.
I should say, God, it's beginning to get all very, very ominous.
Yeah.
But look, I think I was, you know, in my late teens, I was of age.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so that's fine. I think, simulated violence is good. Beheadings?
That's a little bit over the top. I would say a beheading is a little bit over the top because, you know. But,
and also, it's difficult to simulate, to be honest. Yeah. I wouldn't trust many of our players with that. I mean, is it too risky, even asking them to simulate violence? Like, is it a surprise that Giroud didn't injure his bum badly in that celebration?
His the one from Alexis? Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it is, yeah.
We're so prone to injuries. I mean, you know, we're the team, of course, who had someone injured while just doing a knee slide. I think asking them to do...
Who did that?
Kung Fu. I think it was Patrick Vieira.
Oh, he did that against Manchester United, wasn't it? When he scored that amazing goal, he injured himself sliding along on his knees. That's right.
Yeah. So I think we've got to keep the celebrations conservative after consideration.
Do you know what, though? So if I were to have a superpower... There are things you can think of that would be amazing, right? Where you could fly, you could turn invisible, you could, I don't know, stop time, you could do Spider-Man, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there's part of me, James, that thinks one of the greatest superpowers of all time would be the ability to stop a footballer's knee slide by clicking your fingers. So as they celebrate a goal... You click your fingers and they stop and they just go face down into the grass as if they've hit like a brick wall, an invisible brick wall or something. I think that would be amazing. I just go to football grounds around the world waiting for people to score on a wet, slippy pitch. Look at him slide. Go smack. That would be good. I think I'd like that.
That would be great. Or just to sort of, you know, put a little hole in front of them, a divot in the ground, so they just, you know, collapse. That would be, it's a niche superpower.
It really
it's
is.
It's a nice one.
Ah, but, you know, I would tell people about it.
So they'd know it was going to happen.
Everyone would know that when it happened, it was me. But none of the footballers or teams would know if I was in the stadium that day. You see?
So
I could go.
Why would they still knee slide though? Wouldn't they be trepidatious about?
Yeah, but you know what footballers are like. They're a bit thick. They just go, well, what's the chances of him being here today? He could be at Juventus versus AC Milan. No, I'm not. I'm at Kidderminster Harriers against Accrington Stanley, and it's a wet day, and you've just slid, and now bang, you're face first into the ground. I'd have to go in disguise, a master of disguise, but eventually there'd just be headlines. Mangan does it again. As player,
you'd
just,
be like some sort of celebration sniper.
Yeah, exactly. Without causing any real damage, it would just be hilarious japes for football fans around the world. So there you go.
I think it would. Imagine the vines. There'd be plenty.
Well, a phony vine wasn't being shut down.
Yeah, exactly. Oh God, I'm so dated. Right. Anyway, that was so 2016 of me to say vines.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
This question comes from at Neon Away Shirts, who's Ben H, and they say, after Giroud's scorpion kick, are there any other insect goals you would like to see?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm intrigued.
I would like to see the fire ant goal, where the player, in Dracula, you know that scene in Dracula, I think it's Bram Stoker's Dracula, the one by Francis Ford Coppola, and he's standing there and then he just sort of changes into a load of rats and all the rats scurry away, right?
Mm.
Instead of that, the player turns into a swarm of fire ants and devours and stings the opposition to the point where they can't move, and then he comes back into his normal human shape and just rolls the ball across the line, past the screaming, agonizing defenders and goalkeepers and whoever else might be in the way of the fire ants. That's the one I would think of.
Okay.
What about you?
I'm into that. Wow. Well, I've got to top that. There's a Mormon cricket, which is cannibalistic, and it eats, as far as I'm aware, it basically eats its own species in their entirety. So I would like Giroud to eat a player who has the ball entirety. Yeah, I would like Giroud to do it. He has to eat the defender and the ball and then just walk over the line, thus triggering the goal line technology system and scoring the goal.
Awesome. I like that. I like the sound of that one. That's pretty good. What else could you do? Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other insects.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've done hornets, so we don't need to get down the old hornet thing again. But I guess there are probably really venomous caterpillars. The problem with that, though, is that caterpillars, by their very nature, are quite slow. So,
no, but if you sort of if you rounded the goalkeeper and got down on all fours and sort of did the worm with the ball under your body, would that be an insect goal?
I guess it would be. Yeah, line? Exactly.
Yeah, that would be quite cool. A sort of a dragonfly goal where you like hover before, you know, because they can sort of hover, can't they? If you could somehow suspend yourself in the air before launching a bicycle kick, that'd be cool.
What about consuming the ball and then shooting loads of tiny, tiny little balls out of your arse onto a leaf in the goal, and then all the things come together to make the big ball, and there's a goal?
I think I've seen that one done, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think Henrik Mkhitaryan did it in Germany.
All right.
Really good.
Okay, here is a question from... Bum, 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 bum. Got it here. From JB at Gunner Punner. And he says, what's the hardest good Arsenal goal for the average man to recreate?
They do this on Arsenal.com. Not the average man, granted, but they get the current squad to recreate classic Arsenal goals. Have you seen that on the YouTube channel?
No, I haven't really. I've seen them do it on, like, BT do it. I saw... Yeah, I won't say the goal because it's the one that's in my head about what the answer to this question is.
Okay. Well, I think the hardest... So I don't think there's one harder than that Giroud one, if I'm honest. Like, I can't imagine... I mean, even me propelling myself through the air in that way would result in certain death. So I cannot fathom one more difficult than that. What are you thinking of?
Well, I'm thinking of Bergkamp against Newcastle. Simply
I remember
because,
seeing Coutinho try and do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. That was the one I was thinking of. And
He didn't really do it properly, actually. They sort of like, oh, you've achieved it. But I think he used the wrong foot to flick the ball round the defender.
What
so
a
I was
stupid cunt.
Furious. Yeah. I know, I was fuming.
Absolutely. I just think, you know, when we talk about the average man being able to recreate it, there, you know, let's take out the fact that we can't run that fast. And let's look at it from the point of view of what's the technical ability required to score the goal. And I think Bergkamp against Newcastle, A, we wouldn't even think of it. Like, we'd only think of it because Bergkamp did it. It would never occur to us to try and do what he did in that split second, to sort of control the ball around the defender, turn him, hold him off, and score the goal. I just think the sheer technical level of that goal would be beyond anybody, beyond the average man anyway. You'd have to be a special man to do that.
I think that's probably fair.
Because I think anyone can score a belter, you know, from 30 yards. You know, it can happen where you just connect the ball absolutely perfectly. You know, there's loads of people score fantastic goals in Sunday League. You know, the ball drops out and a guy goes, well, fuck it. I'll just have a swing at this and hit it on the volley and see where it goes. And sometimes they go in. But that doesn't mean you're really capable of doing that more than once in your life. A couple of times if you're lucky, you know. So I'd be right up there with the Bergkamp goal. Just in terms of sheer technical difficulty and ability required to pull that off.
I mean, that's a hell of a YouTube video, me and you trying to score that goal.
Oh, fucking hell.
Can you imagine? Be an hour long.
Yeah.
The advertising revenue, think of it. Yeah. People have to stay on the page forever.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Or not.
Definitely, no. That's not something anyone needs to see. I think I might be out of questions. Have you got any more?
Yeah, one final one from me. Based, again, on what we saw yesterday at the Emirates Stadium. I think it's apart from the Giroud goal, it's probably the one image everybody will have of the game. And one-liner at D_Vickery wants to know, has James been giving Arsene Wenger style tips? Because he was quite casual yesterday, James.
He was. Well, that was his Christmas present from me. Some of my hand-me-downs. I just stretched them so that they would fit over his long limbs. Now, I must say that I thought he looked fetching, but then I would say that, wouldn't I?
You would, yeah. I mean, it is pretty much an iconic look for you. bedraggled, soaking, whether it's raining or not.
Yeah, it's bizarre that. It always rains on me. Wherever I sit in the stadium, there's like a leak above me. No, I thought, it's New Year's Day. He was probably a bit hungover, probably partying with the team in the hotel the night before.
Yeah, they were all out.
I must say, he looked a lot better than Sam Allardyce.
Yes, Sam Allardyce did look a bit like, I don't know, like a bin man that had just been hauled off the street to sit on the bench.
He was dressed a bit like Joe Pesci in Home Alone, I thought. Like, in his little hat.
Like a gigantic Joe Pesci.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he didn't get a steaming hot iron to the face, though.
Well, no, that's the one shame. We didn't booby trap the Emirates Stadium with the skill of Macaulay Culkin. he's some absolutely miserable, Sam Allardyce. So, lovely to see him start 2017 with a loss. May it be the first of many. Mm. Never won a game away to Arsenal, I believe.
Yeah, that's a good record on our part, even though he's had, he's often talked himself up, hasn't he? As like, oh, I've out-tactic Arsene Wenger. And all that kind of stuff, but no.
Not so much. Not so much at the Emirates.
No, here, one more quick one, actually, and a couple of people have asked, in the absence of Ozil, do we think that the team plays with a little more pace? Because the people were talking about Iwobi. What do you make of that?
I don't know. It certainly felt true yesterday that we played with a lot of purpose and a lot of drive, a lot of momentum, when we went forward.
Mm.
I don't think that's necessarily to say that we wouldn't do so with Ozil.
Yeah.
I think that was as much to do with other players as it was to do with Iwobi. I think it was as much to do with Perez, Bellerin. Morial was very good going forward yesterday and unencumbered by Andros Townsend, who didn't really seem particularly bothered about defending. Alexis was outstanding, as we've said. So I think it was a pacey performance, but I suspect that's not purely to do with Ozil's absence. What do you reckon?
No, I think that's very much the case. It was Crystal Palace. We were playing well. I do like Iwobi in that role, but it's not as if we've never played well with Mesut Ozil in there as well. So I don't think those things. But then other people were asking, was he actually ill or could he just not bear to face Flamini?
That's so true. If he'd scored, would he have celebrated against Flamini?
Yeah.
It was weird. I saw Flamini in the team, and I think it's only his first or second start for Palace this season. But during the course of the game, I really didn't notice him at all. He barely seemed to figure in the match, which I suppose tells you something about the manner in which we played and how easily we were able to bypass their midfield. We didn't miss him on our side, that's for sure.
That's very true. That's very true. And he did, as we said earlier, make a
telling contribution.
Yes, a very telling contribution to the goal itself. So there you go. Mm,
thank you, Matthew.
Final one. This one comes from Freemy, at Freemy 29. So I guess he's either 29 or the 29th Freemy. One of those.
Oh, right, okay.
He wants to know, can you both recreate the noise you made when Giroud's goal went in?
I don't think I can. I don't think that would be right. I think that should be a sort of exclusively adult-only content, frankly.
Really? Okay, behind a paywall or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I really think. I mean, would you dare attempt it yourself?
Yeah.
Not the noise I made, the noise you made.
Yeah, the noise I made. Hang on, I'll do it here now. We're just going to... Hang on, just going to have a little drink of water here, fizzy water.
Sure.
It's going to take some doing. Okay, all right, hang on. Here we go. Pretty good, eh?
Yeah. Not bad at all.
Yeah.
Not bad at all.
That was almost exactly the way it happened yesterday as well.
And I think, you probably weren't alone in that. That's sort of the noise that Arsenal fans around the world would have made.
Indeed. Well, look, on that beautiful noise, that beautiful goal music, we'll leave it there. We, of course, face Bournemouth tomorrow night, and then the weekend we play Preston North End in the FA Cup. So we'll deal with both those games on the Arsecast on Friday. Myself and James will be back next Monday to talk about the FA Cup and all the rest. So until then, take it easy. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.